Section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
Got Stitcher? We're on it. So get it. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
TNA Impact referee Brian Hebner, and you're listening to Off the Mark.
86 Productions.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Off the Mark. We are the only podcast that provides the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. I am Andrew Hughes and I'm joined by Aaron Hughes for the special episode about the CM Punk documentary, Best in the World. Let's get right into the show. So CM Punk talks about how he was never supposed to make it past the indies. Why is this, Aaron?
Yeah, he talks about the roadblock after roadblock after roadblock that were put in front of him and how he was able to overcome them. And he was able to put his middle finger up towards those people along the way. And, you know, it's one of those things that he was really happy about that we're going to talk about a little bit later, how he's a goal-oriented person. And so he sees these goals and he was able to overcome them, to overcome the obstacles, I should say, and attain his goal. Now, the other thing that, you know, too, is he talks about, his hard work and determination.
Yeah. And one thing that can show his hard work is that he was never given anything in his life. He basically was going to live on the streets, but one of his friends took him in and he actually got a family out of it. He got a mother and two sisters out of it. And he did not want to, he wanted to almost provide for him, but also He wanted to do something with his life. He didn't want to sit around and do nothing like some people do. So, of course, he went through school, graduated, and he started doing the wrestling. And he ended up starting known as the LWF. What is the LWF again, Aaron?
That's a Lunatic Wrestling Federation, which was a backyard wrestling promotion that he did in the Chicago area. And they referred to it as DIY wrestling.
Yes, and DIY, of course, do your own wrestling. They would do shows for small crowds. I mean, we're talking maybe 30 people, and that's not a lot, especially because they were doing it for free the entire time. So 30 people, and you basically got a ring there, you got the seats there, and then you put on matches for 30 people. The one thing that he did learn, he actually learned how to wrestle properly. There's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of indie promotions out there that they don't know how to wrestle, and he was able to actually learn it properly through this. So, you know, he ends up hitting the indie scene, of course. Along the way, he meets, of course, Colt Cabana, also known as Scotty Goodman, but in the DVD they call him Colt Cabana, which I found hilarious. But he met him, and now he said that, he considers him basically his best friend or even as much as a brother, which is a big deal. But the cool part about this feud with Colt Cabana, they were in the same car. They traveled everywhere together. So if for some reason they get pulled over or they stop at a gas station to go get some food or whatever, and they're together, and so there's a fan there, they're going to know, oh, crap, it's all, you know, you could say it's fake then. But the cool part is the one thing that he said, and Colt Cabana said this many times, when he becomes really close to someone as a friend, the matches get better. And the one thing is that these matches, you would have it in Milwaukee, Cleveland, Detroit, Memphis, Philly. You would have that same match pretty much in all these territories.
Yeah, and he said it got better every single time too. And, you know, in particular with Colt Cabana, because they are such good friends, it really made that chemistry in the ring. And when you wrestle so many times, you just already know what the person's going to do. So you can instinctively expect that next move to happen. And, you know, they had a really nice feud in IWA Mid-South, of course, which WWE, the document didn't really touch on that as much, but... they definitely had a lot of great matches.
But the one thing also they didn't talk about is the fact that with Chucky Smooth, one of the guys you used to work with, they never mentioned that thing. And that was kind of a big deal back then in the IWA. Colt said something also in one. I don't know, I think it was on the DVD. It might have been on the extras or somewhere else. But he actually said that usually when you're in the ring, you talk. He said one of the matches that they did, the final match for Ring of Honor, didn't say one word in the ring. They actually did it all by feel. Now, how awesome is that? That shows you that you guys are friends and that you already know how everyone's going to wrestle.
So, and when you wrestle 200 times together, you know.
Yes, you do. And the other
thing... And so anyway,
I was going to say, the other feud that he had was with Chris Hero, which they actually point out in the DVD, it's Chris Hero. And if you watch NXT, it looks like who, Aaron?
Oh, it's Cassius Ohno.
Yes, that's who he looks like. But they use Chris Hero, which I was very happy about. Awesome feud. Same thing with Colt Cabana. Same thing. That match was everywhere. It was great.
And these two definitely had a chemistry in the ring also. And they, you know, like you said, with Colt Cabana, this was one of the feuds of the indies that they really they just tore the roof off of places. And in one instance, they actually did that literally, which is kind of interesting.
Because the place,
but these two.
I was going to say, because the place is closing down, so they won to, so they're throwing each other through the, basically through the walls, and also hanging on the rafters, and at one point, CM Punk is physically trying to pull it down, because he thought it would make the match even better.
And so after the indie scene, they had an opportunity to go to Ring of Honor, and so the Ring of Honor, the person that owned it at the time, brought in Colt Cabana and CM Punk, and they brought him in as a package because they wanted to have that big feud that was going on in the indie scene to go on in Ring of Honor. So that was one of the whole points of bringing him in. But what was interesting is right after the Colt Cabana feud, he had a very, very big time feud with somebody who is well known, and that is Raven.
Scott Levy, you mean? Oh, yeah, Raven. Yeah, it was very well – he was very well – known guy, of course, Raven from WCW and the WWE, and actually ECW is where he started out. And the reason why he feuded with him is because of his interviews and the wrestling style. Probably the match that I remember the most from them was a dog collar match, which I love those matches. Yeah, the chain, you know, right? You know, then you have the leather around the neck, dude. I love those matches. I don't remember all the match, but I just remember saying, oh my gosh, so many times. In the match, it was they had such a great feud.
And yeah, they did. And then his next big feud was with TNA star Samoa Joe. And I was very surprised then the documentary they actually talked about, and they said Samoa Joe. And CM Punk even mentioned that the matches we had were great, and these were huge matches. This is what put Ring of Honor on the map, was me and Samoa Joe. And that actually says something. I mean, I really think it says something about the class of CM Punk and a little bit about WWE to talk about a TNA star, you know, in such a good light like that. But these two definitely had a chemistry in the ring, and you know, the matches that they show, it's polished, and that's something that's really important.
Yeah, and the other thing also about Samoa Joe, you are right, and I was shocked that they talked about him. But the one thing CM Punk said about the DVD is that he wasn't in it, and that's. And I kind of agree with it. He should have been in it. That's my big beef with the whole DVD, actually. But the other thing also is that match, though, I saw multiple matches that they had. They had a couple spots that were the same, but they were all different. And they just worked really well together. And I like to say real safe as well. The other thing also that CM Punk was doing was that he was doing the Ring of Honor, but he was also training wrestlers, like Ring of Honor wrestlers, saying, hey, you're kind of sloppy here. Let's work on it in the ring. Bam, they do it. He'd help them out, make it more, you know, make it more fluent, make the basically make the talking exactly what you need, made it polished. And that's something big, because Ring of Honor, after there was a couple scandals that they had with that, but they made Ring of Honor. Once Samoa Joe left, once CM Punk left, Ring of Honor went down, but then it got back up because they got certain things, certain wrestlers in.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the big things that happened, of course, at the end of CM Punk's tenure at Ring of Honor, he said that was one of the best times of his life, first of all, because he got on a more national stage. But he signs with the WWE, and he's still working at Ring of Honor. And then in what was supposed to be his last match at Ring of Honor, you know, I believe he retained the title. I don't believe he won. I believe he retained it. And while there, he goes and has a swerve for the fans and, you know, calls them, you know, idiots. And then he signs his WWE contract on the Ring of Honor title and still defended it for the coming weeks.
Yeah. And that's the one thing. And people didn't know when he was going to drop it. They're like, okay, this is when he's going to drop it. Okay, this is when he's going to drop it. And each time they're wrong until they went to Chicago Ridge. That's where he dropped it to, of course, his best friend, Colt Cabana. And that's the match I was talking about. If I'm correct, Colt said at one point that they only said either a couple words together or they didn't say anything. They did the entire match by feel, which is very unusual because that doesn't happen in wrestling But those guys were such good friends, and they still are good friends. It just made the match better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Then, of course, you know, like we said, he signed with the WWE, but he went down to Ohio Valley Wrestling. And why, what's going on with this? Why was he straight there? Did they think that he wasn't polished?
I think that's what it was. So the WWE hears about this kid in the indie scene that's making a lot of buzz, CM Punk. You know, and this is a guy I knew about in the indie scene, not just because I had someone who was a friend that worked with him, but, you know, I heard the name CM Punk before. And so WWE snatches him up, and as opposed to put him on SmackDown even, they say, no, you're going to OVW. You're going to be there for a while. We're going to see how well you wrestle and how well you do. And Paul Heyman was the kind of the brainchild at OVW at the time. And Paul Heyman, one of his proteges, worked at Ring of Honor, and all he did was talk about how CM Punk was this great wrestler. And so when Heyman had the chance to work with him, he was just ecstatic. And he definitely saw a talent in Punk. And on top of it, too, he saw the hard work and determination that we talked about earlier. You know, this is something where he talked about he was the first one in the door, last one to leave also. You know, and he worked with Heyman to learn wrestling, to learn the business behind the wrestling, to learn about stuff behind the camera and in front of it, how things work. And that really made him a more polished wrestler, a more polished entertainer, too, which is something, of course, WWE wants.
The other thing also about Paul Heyman is that WWE wanted his name changed. They did not want CM Punk. They wanted it to be something else. You know, they didn't want it Phillip Brooks because, you know, that's his real name. But they wanted to change his name. And Paul Heyman said, do not. He kept saying it over and over. Do not change his name. Keep it CM Punk. And when we look at it back now, he's one of the last guys that came from the indies that kept their name. I mean, Chris Hero didn't, as we know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But the thing
is, and there are so many other wrestlers, to go on a small tangent, that are brought in who are fairly big names that they changed their name. Caval being one of them, you know, who was low key. Mm-hmm. Chris Hero, obviously, they changed his name and he's got an awesome name. Tyler Black. These are people who Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryanson, as I like to call it. These are people who have, you know, marquee names. And they change them because they want to own that property. And CM Punk, like you said, is one of the last people that hasn't had his name changed. And I got to say, I'm glad that they didn't change it, because it would probably be something dumb like Cassius Ohno.
Exactly. And yes, they're doing some – I'm not going to get into it. But anyways, let's move on to the fact that he gets moved up to the main roster finally. He's with, of course, the WWECW, as we like to call it. And he came in, and there was kind of a little mini buzz, because a lot of the indie people knew, you know, the indie fans knew who he was. And they're like, we get to see this guy finally wrestle. Comes out, of course, wins, I think, with the Anaconda Device, if I'm correct. Great match.
Yeah, and he wrestled, you know, a lot of the smaller people there. But he got a lot of buzz, and people were chanting his name. And, you know, he was brought up because of Paul Heyman to Paul Heyman's ECW. And that's one of the things that happened. And then Heyman had left, and then there was something else that had happened in the WWE during that time, which was a really big deal, and that was the death of Chris Benoit. And a lot of people may not realize this, but the night that Benoit died, the night that Benoit stuff happened, he was supposed to wrestle Johnny Nitro, or John Morrison, I don't know what his name was at the time, for the ECW title. And because he wasn't there, they had to scramble. They had to throw somebody else in the match. And the person they threw in was CM Punk, mm-hmm. which is, you know, one of those. I mean, CM Punk took the opportunity, but it's kind of weird how that little thing in there affected it. You know, so Punk goes in, wrestles. He loses to Morrison, but they have a very nice feud, though.
Yeah, they have a long feud, and it then gets to the point. I think they wrestle at like 3 pay-per-views in a row, if I'm correct. And then at that fourth one, he actually beat Morrison finally. So he became the ECW champion, which is a big deal. ECW champion, CM Punk. Great feud with Johnny Nitro, or John Morrison, whoever you want to call him, whatever he was. I think it was John Morrison back then. But yeah, it was a great feud. I enjoyed watching it. And I think at one point, though, I think I said, oh, gosh, another one of these matches. If CM Punk doesn't win here, I'm done. And then he wins. And then it's like, wow, you know, those guys wrestled a great match. I got to give him credit for it. So after that, he ends up moving to Raw. wins Money in the Bank by a... I was surprised about this. I thought, I don't know if this was too soon or what, but he won it. He won Money in the Bank. And by the way, I love those matches at WrestleMania. Too bad they...
Yeah.
I wish they would just do it only at WrestleMania, but anyways. Yeah. But yeah, so he ends up winning the Money in the Bank, and he ends up cashing in and wins the World Heavyweight Championship.
And that was a really big deal because, you know, it's his first title, first major title, and it was a really big deal for him because, you know, this is the title that Ric Flair held, Dusty Rhodes held, you know, and then if you look at it on WWE side, Triple H held, Shawn Michaels, these are huge names in the wrestling world.
And this is also about the time that Triple H decides that, hey, by the way, there's CM Punk, you know, he just won the World Heavyweight title, you know, and then it goes down to the DVD. You ever notice that in the DVD, Triple H is kind of like there and you're like, why is he in this?
Yeah. So he gets that, but he doesn't get the respect. And, you know, one of the things that he said, which I always feel too, is that the title is should always, no matter what, be the focal point of every wrestling show. Everybody wants that title because that title means you're the man. Doesn't matter if you don't have it or not. It's like, yeah, Cena doesn't have it, but guess what? You know, yeah, he's great, but he's not the man right now because there's a man who's better than him. And he didn't get any respect, and there were people behind the scenes, which is something I like about the documentary. They don't just talk about it like it's wrestling. They talk about it as the industry. And he was saying that some people said it was the wrong move and that this kid didn't deserve it and that this kid, you know, he wasn't the focal point of any show. And, you know, people like John Cena were still getting all of the buzz. And so that was something that was interesting. So he eventually drops it. You know, he gets punted by Orton. And then they have a whole thing running with that. But he gets moved to SmackDown, which is where the next big point in his career happens. He wins Money in the Bank again. And then, shockingly enough, Andy, he turns heel.
Against Jeff Hardy. And I was surprised because Jeff Hardy is the TNA champion at this, you know, at the time that the documentary was released. But he talked about going heel and Jeff Hardy, huge face back then. Turns heel to him, and he has the title for a while. Then, of course, he drops it to The Undertaker. And the one thing also about that match with Undertaker, it was a great match. But Taker didn't say it to CM Punk directly, but he told some guys. He said it was one of his favorite matches. He said that he earned my respect. And usually Undertaker doesn't say that about anybody, but he said it about him. And he also said it also to Jeff Hardy. But it was just one of those things. There's not many people that gain his respect and the fact that he did. And him dropping it to the Taker, you know, that's the one thing. I don't see that as a negative thing.
It's more positive. But
yeah.
The thing that was interesting, though, is he dropped it and he's like, that's fine. What do you got for me now? And they're like, we don't know. And so Punk, like his time in OVW with Paul Heyman, he learned about the wrestling business a little bit. And so he goes and he said like a 14-page thing saying, here's what I'm doing for the next 6 months, and drops on Vince McMahon's desk. And Vince is like, all right, that's fine. You know, at least you know what you're doing with yourself because we don't know.
As Vince drops it in the shredder. Yeah.
So he starts the Straight Edge Society. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably one of, you know, the best times. And that was the time I loved. I loved that time in his career. So he starts Straight Edge Society.
And the one thing that he talked about in it is that they were getting like death threats. And that's what he wanted. Like, he had people, like churchgoers, like saying all this negative stuff, saying you aren't Christ or whatever, because he had his hair long and like the beard, just like how Jesus Christ is portrayed everywhere. And then he gets, of course, he takes, is it Fetus? Was that his name?
Festus, something like that.
Who actually was with Kurt Hawkins and basically made him clean. Because it made him clean, he came out to... Now, I can't remember his name.
Luke Gallows.
Thank you to Luke Gallows. So Luke Gallows came out. He's the first member of Straight Edge Society.
And then you had Serena, and you had in Joey Mercury.
And then the one thing that CM Punk talked about is that he told Joey, he's like, your name is now Joseph because it's a biblical name. So he becomes Joseph Mercury from now on, which I think is awesome. So he's ticking everyone off. And I loved it. I mean, you know, he got people to shave their heads. They got fans, quote unquote, fans into the ring. They all shaved their heads. I was pretty happy about this. And like, it made me angry too. But I was also like, this is genius. This is exactly what you do as a heel, you know, and that's just one of those things. I'm happy about it. The other thing also I want to talk about with the Straight Edge Society, Joey Mercury got released. And that's kind of what started the Straight Society to kind of like dissolve, basically. And then they released Selena, right?
Yeah, and Luke Gallows shortly after.
And then so he had there was no Straight Society. But something was said why Joey Mercury was actually released. He had a drug problem, and then he talked to Punk. And make a long story short, Joey Mercury said CM Punk is his best friend because he did something that I think tells about the person. He said he had some money problems. His family was going to lose the house. They had to find a place to live. CM Punk said, "How much do you owe?" and wrote him a check for it. Bought the house outright.
And that does say something definitely about him. But yeah. Andy, let's move on though back to the contract. Like you said, Straight Edge Society fell, and so he took over the Nexus. So he took over the new Nexus, and this was an angle they played during Royal Rumble, which was awesome. And I mean, the Royal Rumble stuff that happened during that time was amazing. I loved it. And then after that, him and Orton had a feud with Nexus, and he took on Orton at WrestleMania, and it was one of those we had talked about on the show. CM Punk needs to win because this will put him over. You know, he's on that mid-card, upper mid-card area. Have him win, he becomes a main eventer, and that would be a smart thing to do, and they didn't. You know, Orton won at WrestleMania, and that just did not make any sense. But what was interesting was after that, he had a couple of dumb feuds in between there. And then he publicly stated in June, right before the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, he said, "Look, my contract's coming to an end, and I'm leaving."
And this is where probably the best thing that could have ever happened to the WWE happens. See, they basically, the one thing that he said he always wanted was he just wants the stick. He wants the mic. He wants to talk on it. Let him do his thing. So he goes into it and does, hands down, the best promo I've heard in a decade, if not longer. I don't remember the last time I heard something that good.
And so he cut the promo. Mm-hmm. And this was something that once it was said, it became just the internet blew up. CM Punk was trending on Twitter. Jim Rome wanted him. ESPN was calling. They were asking for Phil Brooks to be on their show and air his grievances. And this is a guy who ESPN stays away from, right? ESPN, I mean, that's fake. You know, who cares about that stuff? And they're like knocking down his door. And that promo, what he said, was amazing. And I mean, as Smarks listening to it, you're sitting there like, oh my God, he's going to get fired. He's going to get fired. Well, he's leaving anyway, you know? Mm-hmm. That promo, people compare it to the Austin 316 promo is what they compare it to. And I got to say, I mean, yeah, I would say it probably is. And then that led to Money in the Bank 2011.
One thing also about his promo, he still cut a heel promo. Even though he was doing what he wanted to, he still cut a heel promo by saying he basically bashed the fans, saying, "Let's get something straight. Those who are cheering for me right now, you are just as big a part of me leaving as anyone else." Which I think is awesome.
What was funny is that they turned that promo into a storyline, and they turned him around to make him a fan favorite. But Money in the Bank 2011, so our friend of the show, Doug Hahn, is there. And he said that the crowd was electrifying and that it was just amazing. And when Punk came out, that place blew up and all you hear are cheers. And, that match, Cena and Punk, I mean, it was a 5-star match. It was the best match of the year, I would argue.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. And the thing that was amazing about it is CM Punk is supposed to be gone. It's his last night in the WWE. And he wins the WWE title.
Yes, he wins it. After he wins it, he shows it to his friends. Ace Steel and Cole Cabana sitting in the front row, shows them the title and smiles. And can you believe it? And then, of course, Vince McMahon comes out. And
he was out there already.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was. He wanted Del Rio to come in there. He doesn't.
Yeah. CM Punk walks out. He kisses him goodbye and he walks out. What was interesting, though, is right before the match is when he signed his new contract.
Yes, but he called Vince earlier that morning and said, "I want to stay." And that's how the match happened. They said that only four people knew what was happening in the match, and the ref kind of knew what was going on, which is very interesting because it's just one of those things. I thought there was going to be a screw job, but as Doug said when he was there, he said it was very intense, very electrifying, hands down probably the best pay-per-view he's ever seen. And getting to that pay-per-view real quick, that was probably the pay-per-view of the year, if not the decade, so far. Great match.
Definitely of that year.
But yeah, so he's gone. And all of a sudden he shows up. The one thing also, he came back to beat Cena. because Cena was in a tournament where he won the championship. All of a sudden, you heard Cult of Personality. I knew who it was right away because I was like, that was CM Punk's theme music comes out with the real title, and Cena had the fake title.
Yeah, so, and, you know, it started a storyline there where who was the real champion, and then they had a match at SummerSlam, Punk wins, then Del Rio cashes in his Money in the Bank, and they have the, you know, back and forth there. But more recent activity, so at Survivor Series in 2011, CM Punk wins the title, and then he holds it. He holds it for over a year. Mm-hmm. And during that time, he defends it against Chris Jericho, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, Ryback. You know, these are names that, you know, well, the first three anyway, are really big names in the WWE world. And then Ryback might become a huge name down the line. So these are really big names that he defends the title against. And during his title run, which has been over a year now, it's one of those things that wasn't stale. It doesn't feel like, oh, when are they taking the title off of him? He's a face at the beginning. He ends it as a heel. And he has all these things happening in between that make it interesting. And that's the biggest thing about his title run so far, is that it has been very interesting.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem, like you were saying, it doesn't seem dragged on. I remember even when Goldberg had his title, at one point, even though it was only like 7 months, you're just like, you know, at one point he's going to have to drop it. But CM Punk, it was never really talked about how long he had the title until recently. And then that's when he started naming all the people who had the title as long. And Nash's run, when he had it for as long as he did, that was the worst time in the WWF at the time. It was horrible. And mm-hmm. he was the only guy. So, of course, they're like, here you go. Here's the title belt. You know, but CM Punk has surpassed now Randy Savage and John Cena, too, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one of the longest reigns in WWE history. I think it's going to be number 7. And he said at one point that to get to number 1, he said when that day would be. But anyways, it's just, where do you go from here, though, with CM Punk? You know, how long is he going to hold it for, dude? Do you think he's going to hold it for the next 2-3 years? Or, you know, who is he going to drop it to?
I think that's the biggest thing, is who is he going to drop it to? Because right now, CM Punk is, you know, one of the top two people in WWE. You can argue between him and Cena. You know, Punk is in WWE right now, one of the guys. And so how long is he going to hold it for? I think he's going to hold it for another couple of months. You know, I think that he will drop it soon enough. You know, you have a long enough reign, it solidifies your legacy, but then you have to drop it, and you have to drop it to somebody that deserves it. I think that's the biggest thing. He could drop it to John Cena and be like, okay, that's fine. But what if he drops it to somebody else who you don't expect? In fact, I'm going to throw one that might surprise you, which is Ryback. What if he dropped it to Ryback in like 2 months? That would be one of those things that would help out Ryback in particular. So, but I'm just saying, like, that's pure speculation. The point is, where do you go from here? You have a person now who is a made man, who after he drops the title, he doesn't need the title anymore because he's surpassed that area. Now he's going to have feuds with other people who he doesn't have to have the title as a prop in order to make that feud worthwhile.
But also, he doesn't think of it as a prop. Cena has said before that he finds the WWE title, it's just a prop. That mm-hmm. still ticks me off. And he did say when he first got the few titles, it was a huge deal to him. Even the small ones that he got, and even all the way up to when he won the championship the first time. But they've asked him at one point, he said it's just a prop because he does all this charity stuff. But anyways, one thing, I just don't know where we're... if he's really considered the best in the business. I mean, right now he is. But was he better than Hogan? Was he better than Savage? Goldberg? Diesel?
Yeah.
You know, Bruno?
there's your threshold there. Now, what does this reign mean that he's real? And is he going to go down as, you know, one of the best in the wrestling business? That's the biggest question is, you know, you think about wrestlers. And yes, Hulk Hogan obviously is going to come up. You have a Savage, maybe an Ultimate Warrior. Then you move on to a Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold, Rock. Next era, you have Cena, Punk. I mean, do you throw him in there with that equation?
I don't know if you do it yet, but because I still think Orton. For some reason, I always think Cena, Orton, that's who I think of. But Punk was, I guess it's because I think Punk is better than both those guys. So I put CM Punk at a different part. I think he's better than both of them. Cena is the face of the company, but CM Punk is also the face, but he's also the weird face. You know, you can always say he's the face for the faceless or whatever. but the thing is also because here's one thing. John Cena is ripped. Ryback is ripped. Okay. Orton is ripped. CM Punk isn't. That's the weird thing. Usually your champion is completely built, has the abs, has the perfect pectorals and the biceps and the tries and the forearms. CM Punk doesn't have that. And he's never had that, which I find kind of cool, actually. He seems more normal. And the only reason he's different is because of his tats. I find that interesting still.
Yeah. Now, my question is, what are your final thoughts on the documentary itself?
Hands down, it's the best opening I've ever seen for any of the documentaries that WWE's put out. And it's because CM Punk is the one who helped work on it. I thought it was really interesting. It showed like how he traveled, how he spent a little bit more money because he's a tightwad, and he bought a bus so he could travel in style, but also for his body. But if you looked at his place, it's kind of simple. There's nothing special. It's nothing extravagant. He just lives in Chicago. The documentary itself, I was very happy with when I first watched it. I ended up watching a second time because I was like, wow, this is really good. They took, you know, a lot of time, a lot of effort, and put the story together properly. And mm-hmm. You could tell that the WWE threw some stuff in there, of course, like I said earlier with Triple H. But you notice that Vince McMahon wasn't in it, and I was hoping that he would say something about the promo that he did. By the way, I think that from now on, from now until it happens again, it's going to be known as the promo. Because the promo before, I always thought of Austin 316. Now we think of CM Punk's promo that he put out.
Yeah. I mean, it'll probably be a while until that next promo happens. But my thoughts are on this documentary. It was one of the best I've seen in the longest time. And at the end of the year, we do our end of the year awards. And, you know, I mean, this is going to be a shoo-in for the best, DVD they put out by far. It was really good. It was a nice change of pace for what WWE has put out. They didn't pull any punches, and they talked about things how, you know, hey, I came in one day and I was told I'm going to drop the title, due to an attack. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. They're saying that, guess what? This person is actually a real person in this story. And that's what I really liked about it. They didn't say, oh, you know, I was wrestling and then I was attacked from behind and I didn't know that was going to happen. And that's one of the things I really liked about it. I think that they did a very, very good job on this. And I hope that they put out more like this. I really hope that they do where they pull back the curtain a little bit. You don't have to pull back everything. But, you know, people are smart enough to know that it's fake, that this is a story. And that's one of the things I really liked about it. And, you know, CM Punk in the documentary itself, he didn't come across as the nicest guy in the world. He kind of came across as a little bit of a jerk, which is who he really is. And that's something I liked about it. And I felt that the story and the pacing was done very well. And so kudos to WWE for what they did this year on this story. I'm very, very happy with it. And I hope that they do more.
Yeah, and like you said earlier about the DVD, they didn't break character. They broke character. They weren't that guy. That's what I love about it. It wasn't just CM Punk. It was Phillip Brooks, the person, and he was telling you what really happens. That's what I love about the documentary on this. It's just such a great one. So that's all the time we have for the CM Punk documentary. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at OffTheMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and editing the podcast. And I want to thank all of our listeners for taking time to download and listen to the show. And until next time, we're tagging out.